Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up with shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Woo! Man, that week went fast. Here we are. You are now talking with TD. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is your host, Teron Davenport. Got Elijah Campbell hitting these switches, making it happen. And this is a packed show, ladies and gentlemen. We used phone a friend a few times with this one. We got Colts reporter, ESPN NFL Nation, Mike Wells coming on. We got Louis Riddick, ESPN NFL draft analyst. Then we got Caleb Farley coming on too. So it's a packed show, man. I'm excited to bring it to you. And before we do all that, I didn't announce him with the guest because, I mean, he's one of those guys where he comes to the house and you just say, hey, man, the refrigerator's right there. The cups are over there. The plates are here. Go ahead and do what you do. Can I get that music real quick?
DMT. For you.
You know what time it is. Run TMC. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Chris Sanders joins me, former Titans receiver. Chris, what's going on, man?
Man, I'm doing good. What's up with you, man? You good?
Oh, yeah. Always good, man. Woke up this morning, so you know it was a dub right there.
You feel like Robert Parrish, though.
Hey, listen. The Chief. Oh, man. Johnny Battle looking fool.
Well, it's good. What's going on with you, man? You excited about the schedule and stuff coming out?
Yeah, the schedule release, that means, you know, a post is going to have to be worked up. This year, I'm glad we don't have to do record predictions, so that way, you know, it's all the trolls, how do you think they're going to go? Just stop. So that's a good thing. I'm excited about that, right? More importantly, I am excited about getting my first look at this Titans draft class.
I know, man.
We got the Saturday is media availability, so we are going to get to take a look. I want to see these guys in person, those that I haven't, because I already saw a few of them in person from the Senior Bowl. But what better topic to discuss than leading up to your first rookie camp and your first training camp and everything? So I'm glad we got you. Any particular stories stand out or anything along those lines?
Man, it was crazy. When I first came into camp, all I kept hearing is, well, he may sit, he may play, and all these things. So, number one, I came in with an edge. And before I got there, they had to run and shoot. So, you know, on the roster, you only keep about 5 to 6 receivers. They had about 8 receivers at the time. So they had Webster Slaughter, they had Haywood Jeffries, they had guys that's been established. So the first day I came in, the one thing that I definitely wanted to do is – I want to make sure I make my presence known. I did not want to be a rookie sitting in the back of the line in one-on-one and just hope somebody else goes. When one-on-one came, the first person I went against was Blaine Bishop. And Blaine Bishop was talking to me like, yeah, I got this guy from Ohio State, hit him up for 7, and he never covered me anymore. And after that, he's like, I'm done. He's like, he's too fast. And then I made sure that I went against Chris Dishman and Marcus Robertson and guys like that to make sure I earned the respect of not just the offense, but earn the respect of the guys on the defense, because I understood that if I earn the respect for them, I'm telling you, man, then now I'm not just a rookie. They're looking for me, a guy to come in and play.
What about rookie minicamp? You know, leading up to that, how was your mindset? What were you thinking? Was it tough, like, to, you know, corral the excitement? Like, you want to go out there and you want to play relaxed, but at the same time, you're amped up because, hey, man, this is my first time wearing an NFL jersey.
Yeah, you're gonna be amped up and you're gonna be excited. But here's what you have to do: is you gotta make sure that you control it. And when I say control it, you gotta make sure you be coachable. You gotta make sure that you still gotta run the route, because you gotta understand something, that it's gonna be fun the first 5 minutes, but when you start running go route after go route, post as a post, you don't it ain't excited anymore.
Right.
I got to run the route. So, you know, the one thing I wanted to make sure that I was doing this is make sure I was coachable. Number two, that I was picking up the playbook so they could see that I was ready to play.
So, do you remember your first rep?
Yes.
In rookie camp?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Who was I going against? I think I was going against a defensive back. We're doing one-on-one because we really didn't do too much 7-on-7 and stuff like that.
Right.
And he was talking stuff, so I'm like, okay, let's go get him. So what I did is I ran a slant, caught it, and instead of just running 15 yards, I ran the whole distance, and he was chasing me. let's just throw up the goalpost signs because it's a touchdown, baby. The band was up playing and everything, so you know that.
What do you think these guys are thinking as they get ready? We'll run through a couple of them.
Sure.
What's the first thing that you would imagine Caleb Farley is contemplating and thinking about?
Oh, man, you can tell, man. Just listen to his interview. He can't wait to get out there. And I think just listen to his interview and his personality, he can't wait to prove everybody wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's talking about his back. Even myself, you know, I'm not being critical. I'm just saying because I had the back injury. He is chomping at the bit because there's two things. They want to show that, number one, he wants to show that he's a dog, which he is. And number two, he wants to prove that even though I had two back surgeries and I tore my ACL, that I'm still that number one pick that the Titans picked.
Does he have to be extra careful not to overexert it, right? Because you know that back, that's a touchy situation.
Yeah, but when you're a competitor, sometimes you don't think about that. And with him, just watching him go one-on-one with different wide receivers, he's reckless. He's physical, so he only knows one way. So I can't wait to see what he does. I understand the back, and you have to be careful. But I don't think he's going to play tentative, and I don't think he's going to play, you know, just real calm. He's going to play on what got him there,
mm-hmm.
with being aggressive, choking people at the line of scrimmage, technique. So he's going to say, you know what, I understand I have a back issue. I understand that people say I can't do it. Let me show you by choking people at the line of scrimmage.
So let's go to Dylan Radins. And this is a guy, and I always hate the offensive linemen and defense, O-line, D-line at these points, right? Because you can't, what can you do? Honestly, what can you do? So what is he thinking?
I think for him, he's just making sure he picks up the offense because, you know, in camp, they're really not going to be doing anything. They can't hit because, it's you know, you don't have any pads. But I think what the coaches are looking for is, number one, is he coachable? Number two, can he pick up the offense? And number three, is he versatile? Can he play the right, the left offensive tackle or the right offensive tackle? So they're going to see if he can do that and see who picks up, see if he can pick up the information quick. So if he can pick up the information quick when he comes to actual camp and the pads are on, then he can play a level two of skill set because now he doesn't have to worry about making mistakes.
Let's go to Monty Rice. And funny story, man. I remember in college, actually my roommate during camp was a linebacker. His name is John Godfrey from Baltimore, Maryland. And
John Godfrey, he played with the Titans, didn't he?
No, not that one. Not Randall Godfrey. John Godfrey. Yeah.
Okay.
But this dude, like, we were in basically what you're going to – these guys are going to be in Saturday, right? Helmets, shorts, T-shirts. Yeah. And this dude was out there hitting. So that just struck me when I said Monty Rice and linebacker. Well, what's his thoughts?
I mean, he's going to come in aggressive. You know, just like we talked about, he has a lot to prove. So everybody knows he's strong and he's physical, and he wants to show that he can come in and play right away. But here's what the coaches are looking for. Can you play smart? See, we understand that he's physical. We understand that he's got big hands. We understand that he's swole. But can you come in here and practice in a way that still helps the team get better? I'm telling you, when you come in the shorts, they're not looking for you to give a hard hit because there's no pads.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a tough guy. They want to see, okay, I want to watch his feet. I want to watch how he looks in the backfoot. I want to watch how he moves his feet. I want to see, is he instinctive? I want to see, hey, can this guy pick up the defense? Can he handle a blitz? Can he do all these things that they want to do? Because I'm going to tell you something, they're going to load these guys up with a lot of information, and they're going to watch each and every one and see how they respond. And I think Monty Rice is going to respond okay.
I'm going to talk Elijah Molden, and that's because I want to get this out there. And the thing with him, he keeps being classified as a corner, but I just call him a DB, right? Because he's a nickel. He can play nickel corner. He can line up outside if you need him to. He can play safety. You just said something that was really key, loading these guys with a lot of information.
Yeah.
And that brought me back to Amani Hooker as a rookie, because in minicamp, that was when, not rookie minicamp, I'm talking about minicamp itself, mandatory minicamp, that's when I started to see him working with the first group of nickel.
Yeah.
So that being said, how important is it for Molden to go out there and show that he has somewhat digested this playbook right away?
I think it's advantage to him because just listen to his interviews. This guy studies film. This guy studies the playbook. This guy wants to be a master of his craft and just not just been a master of his skill set, but having knowledge of what to do. So I think it's a plus for him. And the one thing about him, don't be surprised if he has five or six fights in camp. I mean, he's just one of those guys that just get underneath your skin and be like, come on, man. He reminds me of Courtland Finnegan. I'm not saying they're two totally different players. But Corlin, just get under your skin. You just want to fight. And don't be surprised. He might fight Taylor Lewan. I'm telling you, this is the kind of scrappy, nasty, you know, guy that you want on your team. But going back to what you said, I think it's going to be like riding a bike for him when it comes to the playbook, because he understands the concept. He understands what the coach is looking for, and he's a student of the game. And when you're a student of the game and they throw all this information to you, it's just like riding a bike.
To your point, Mike Vrabel said that Molden had watched three of their games and was discussing the defense with them, like as if, you know, he had known it. You know what I mean? I thought that was really cool. And just the fact that he invested that much, because you can't do that with all teams, right?
No,
I mean, there's 32 teams. You can't watch three, you know. So I give him props for that one.
Yeah, but it just shows you that he wants to I think he wants to let the coach know that you can trust me. And if a coach can trust you and you pick up all the information, that just pushes you far in the front to become a starter when you have nickel and dime.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to skip Weaver because we don't know what the whole situation, Rashad Weaver. And, we're going to skip that one. But I do want to go to two of the receivers. And it's obviously two different situations. So let's look at Des Fitzpatrick and Racy McMath. What are these guys thinking? What's the difference between their thought process?
I think with them, you know, there's a lot of competition. You got A.J. Brown, Josh Reynolds, Batson. You got Fred Brown. You got Chester. You got Westbrook. There's a lot of competition here. So if both of these guys come in and play well at wide receiver and pick up the playbook, but also be versatile and learn every position, then that's a plus for you. If I'm the X receiver, I need to know the Z receiver. If I'm the Z receiver, I need to know the X or the H or the slot or whatever concept it is. That's what these guys need to do. And then on the flip side, they need to make sure that every special teams that they call, they need to go up to the coach and say, "Coach, put me in, coach. I want to be on kickoff. I want to be on kickoff return. I want to be on punt." Because now when it comes down to it and it's time to keep a guy that's just playing the X receiver, or a guy that's playing the X receiver and the H receiver and the Z receiver and also special teams, that's who they're going to pick, because he brings more to the table.
The more you could do.
The more you can do.
Absolutely. So that was some pretty cool stuff, man. Are there any particular guys? I know we're pressed for time, but real quick, any particular guys that you're really looking at?
You know, it's funny because I want to see Des Fitzpatrick. That's funny that you said the receiver. I want to see him because he's a big guy, and I want to see how he competes in one-on-one. You know, I know you talked about his releases and the things that he does well, but I want to see how he competes when he's going against cornerbacks that are in his mustache. Does he have a game plan like he did at the Senior Bowl and he did in college? I want to see what he does when he goes against elite competition.
There you have it right there. Chris Sanders, Run TMC.
Let's go!
Even though he looks like Kevin Willis, it's all good.
You look like Thurgood Marshall. I'm just kidding, me. No, you're my guy.
Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house. You name the spot. Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call, and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
This is Caleb Farley. I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. You got that OG music, because we got an OG coming on, man. One of my favorite analysts, Lou Riddick. ESPN Zone. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Nah, no problem, man. Thanks for coming on. I had to get you on just because I always love your takes, man. And it's funny because in our group chat, my friends and I, we talk. We're like, yo, Lou always talk like he's ready to punch somebody in the face, man.
Sometimes, you know, it's funny you say that, because in broadcasting, you know, a lot of times, like my family and my close friends and stuff will say, "Hey, man, look, we know how you are. We know that you're just intense. You know, you believe in what you say and all. And we know what we can see right through it. We just know that's just Lewis. That's just you talking." He said, "But everybody doesn't know that about you. So, you know, just be mindful of when you're talking sometimes that you aren't yelling at people. So, you know, because, you know, we know that you don't mean it that way. But that's always something that I'm trying to be very mindful of when I'm on TV, and so people don't feel like I'm lecturing them. And I'm just passionate about the game, you know. I just take it real serious. That's all. So I gotta let my soft side show a little bit. That's all I'm trying to do during the draft this year and have a little bit more fun with it.
Now, you know, to be honest, I love it. You know what I mean? Because as you said, it projects passion, and I think it's really good because this is a sport. Like, you don't talk about it softly. It's a sport that has so much emotion involved, and it's physical.
Yeah.
So the way you talk about it matches it.
Yeah, I mean, when I first got into pros outside of my first year in Atlanta, I mean, when I got to Cleveland, my second year, I walked into a room where it was Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, man. So, like, right from the get-go, my education in the NFL game was all about intensity.
Yeah.
It wasn't a whole lot of sugarcoating anything. And so I've always had that attitude about it, man, because I just remember them days of listening to those two just get on my behind all the time. And it's all good, though. I mean, I wouldn't have changed it for the world, man. So what you see is what you get with me.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes you a really good analyst. And that being said, I wanted to get in touch with you to talk a little bit about this Titans draft class. And there's a few guys I want to get your take on, and I'm just going to kind of bounce around. And first and foremost, I want to go with Elijah Molden because, you know, the Titans fans, I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter, but they've really taken to your reference to him as a Jedi of the slot. They love that. They love
it. I saw that.
So I wanted to kind of get your take. What's behind? Why did you call him a Jedi of the slot?
Because there's a lot of things that are happening around you. There's a lot of chaos that's around you when you're playing in the slot because of the conflict that you have run past. You know, you're basically, a Sam Backer. If you were in base defense, that's who you basically are. And so you have to be a guy who's able to read run pass real quick, understand where your run fit is, and not be soft about it, and be able to take on blockers, get ball carriers down the backfield, blitz if they ask you to blitz, make sure you get the quarterback on the ground, match up against tight ends, match up against wide receivers, running backs. So you have a lot that you have to do, a lot of different roles that you have to play, and it happens so fast that you almost have to be in numerous places at once and stay calm about it so you're not just running around like a chicken with head cut off. And that's why I say, like, Elijah, when you watch him play, there's never any panic. There's never any stress. It's kind of just very methodical. I can see all these different things happening around me. There's a lot of chaos around me, but I'm in control. I know where I need to be on the run. I know what my leverage needs to be in the pass. I know how to get myself in position to make plays on the ball. And so, to me, I mean, that's kind of like Luke Skywalker type stuff, man. I mean, he can just see all these different things, but he never looks panicked and out of control. And that to me signifies a guy who has really dialed into the game at another level. And for a young player, I mean, obviously, this guy who comes from great bloodlines. I mean, when your father's been a pro, usually a lot of that stuff kind of transfers. You can see it with him, and I think he will quickly, very quickly, adapt to the pro game and hit the ground running.
That's a glowing endorsement of Elijah Molden, and I'm with you. He's a guy I really liked. I talked to him a few times in the whole lead-up to the draft, so I'm glad you're on the same lines of him being a good player. Another one I want to talk about is Caleb Farley. And the thing that's interesting with him, obviously, is the back. You got the L5, L4, the S1.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows how twitchy he's going to be afterwards, but he has what I love about DBs, and that's ball skills. And you sat in that chair, that GM chair, and you had to put your name on a risk, right? And yet it's tough. So how do you look at the whole situation as far as how that evolved with Farley and him going 22? Do you think that's a risky pick?
Okay, I'll say this. Knowing what I know, and I got some pretty good intel on how he got injured, how his surgeries have gone, and where he projects in the future, both in terms of how quickly he'll be back and how long he'll be able to play, that all leads me to believe that this was well worth the risk. Okay, now, managing him going forward, not putting him in those positions to injure his back the way he was put in position to injure it before when he was in college, is going to be crucial. Okay, so one of the most important people in the entire Titans organization is going to be the people who are in charge of strength and conditioning and rehab and sports performance, however Mike has it broken down there. They're going to be the most important people in the organization as it relates to Caleb Farley, both in terms of how he continues to rehab and making sure that this kind of thing never happens to him or any other player again, okay? Because what happened to him should have never happened to him in the first place. Okay, he should have never been doing some of the things that he was being asked to do that put him in this position to injure his back in the first place, period. Going forward, I think he's going to be fine is what I'm told. You manage it right, he'll be fine. Now, as far as the player on the field, couldn't agree with you more. He's got ridiculous ball skills, which is something you can work on as a DB, but a lot of times you were born with that innate instinctive ability to be able to judge when a ball has reached its peak, where it's going to come down, how to time your jump, getting your hands in the proper position, getting yourself in position relative to the receiver and beating him to the punt. That's something a lot of times you just know how to do. And some people just struggle with it. And guys work on it, and they may get better at it, but they'll never be as good as the guy who can naturally do that. Sean Taylor, when I was in Washington, great safety from the University of Miami, who we had drafted there, had ball skills like it was, you're talking about being a Jedi. As far as the ball being in the air, you weren't going to beat him to the ball. You weren't going to out-jump him to the ball. And he had hands like Michael Jordan. I mean, he had these big old paws that when his hands touched the ball, that was it. This is one of the only guys I've ever seen who didn't wear gloves really at all. It don't matter what the weather was, because he just had those big bear paws that could just finish on the football. And Caleb finishes on the ball like that. On top of it, you've seen, like, he says that when he was in high school, he used to tell people, he ran 4.3 because they didn't believe him when he said that he ran 4.2. When you watch him play, you see every bit of 4.2 on the field.
Yeah.
This kid can run, and it is functional speed, and he will close on that rock in a hurry. So I think, to me, if he had never injured his back, he easily, to me, was the most skilled cover corner in this draft. And I like Patrick Surtain, and I like JC, but they, from a pure coverage standpoint, they ain't got nothing for Caleb. Nothing. As far as being able to play from off, pedal, read through three-step, read routes at the move point, get their feet right, break on the ball, close, finish, not with his PBUs, but interception, and none of them can touch him. This kid had it all, but his back, the injury screwed him up. Now, there are people who said, look, well, you know, Caleb is a buffet tackler. He'll decide when he wants to do it. He'll pick and choose. Yeah, okay, well, you don't draft quarterbacks in the first round. The first thing you don't talk about is how tough they are in terms of, you know, supporting the run or knocking the crap out of people. These guys are paid to cover and turn the ball over.
Yep.
No one could do it better than this kid. Keep him healthy, and they will have hit a home run.
And he'll mess around to score the football, too. And I love how you mentioned the speed.
No question.
Because one of the things in watching him, it seems like he's so willing to open up and invite a receiver to run down the field. But then when they throttle down, he'll get into his pedal but explode out. And you see him, as you said, drive on the football. So I'm glad you mentioned that. You were in Mobile. You saw some of the Senior Bowl guys. So I want to just get two guys real quick, your take on them. Let's start with Dez Fitzpatrick. I love the way he gets up on the corners and he stacks them really well. What are your thoughts on him? And then we'll go to Dylan Radins.
Yeah, I mean, Dez is just, you know, big, strong, physical. He's a guy who needs to make sure, you know, from a route running perspective, that he's always getting in and out the way he needs to as far as getting his hips down, getting in and out of the break, because obviously, I mean, that's where DBs, you give them time to either make up ground on you or you don't give them any time. He just needs to make sure his feet are right at those moments, and he'll be just fine. But he is a big, strong, physical guy. He's the kind of guy that you would expect Mike Vrabel to like and want in the mix with, you know, considering the fact that that's exactly what AJ is. I mean, one of those guys who's going to catch a lot of the in-breaking stuff, the slants, the dig, the post, the skinny. I mean, that's what Dez will be able to do as well. And he'll also be able to gut you on some of these, you know, tunnel screens and rocket screens because he's just so big and physical with the ball in his hand. So, I mean, I like the pick. As far as Dillon is concerned, you know, what's interesting is I think this is a great pickup for them because if you watch North Dakota State,
preach,
they were a wide zone play action type of football team.
Exactly.
That's exactly what Tennessee is. Tennessee is wide zone play action, boot. That's the kind of thing that they like to do. So he's going to be very, very used to, I'm sure, the kind of things they're going to ask him to do from a footwork perspective, landmarks, pass protection, you know, play action, pass protection. I mean, a lot of those things should just make sense to him, which is one of the reasons why I said, I mean, obviously Arthur's not there anymore, Arthur Smith, and he's in Atlanta, but assuming that they keep that same kind of philosophy in Tennessee, it's why I said a guy like Trey Lance and anybody who played in North Dakota State's offense would make so much sense for Arthur in Atlanta because it looked like Arthur was calling their plays mm-hmm. up there. If you would have said who was the offensive coordinator at North Dakota State last year or in 2019, I would have said Arthur Smith was up there because look at their stuff and look what he was doing with Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. It looks exactly the same. So I think Dillon's going to benefit from that as well.
It's funny you mention that because when I talked to him on his intro presser, that's one of the things I asked about the similarities, and he said they were definitely there. So obviously, we already know that you watched the film, but that right there just further cemented that. So, hey, man, I appreciate you coming on. I am hoping the Titans get some Monday night games. So this way, you know, maybe we could link up at one of these games if we had the travel going, man. I love your takes, being on Monday night. So I'm hoping, you know, we could see you in some fresh gear too, man. I know the suit game is right.
All right. I appreciate it, brother.
Okay. All right, man.
Good to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD. Now here's a funky introduction of how nice I am.
Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. All right, here we go. Keeping it rolling. Talking with TD back from the break. Man, I always like to use that phone a friend feature. You know what I mean, Elijah? And we'll kind of shuffle through the AFC South. That's the division that the Titans play in. So we're going to start off with my guy, my homie, man, Mike Wells, Indianapolis Colts reporter for ESPN. Mike, what's going on, man?
What's up, team, man? I see you rolling with a little Tribe Called Quest, man. That's what I'm talking. You rolling with Tribe, I know I can roll with you on the show, man.
You already know it, man. Handpicked just for you. That's what we do, man. An OG gets the OG music.
That's what I like. And, you know, the young kids like Tribe Called Quest. Who's Tribe Called Quest? We got to Google that.
Yeah, man. I had Louis Riddick on earlier, and I hit him with the DOC, the formula. You know what I mean? That's what we do. We throw it back, man.
The doc.
That's right. So I wanted to get you on to talk a little shop, go over this draft class that the Colts have. And I have a particular guy that's my favorite player in this gathering that they've gotten. But let's start from the top. Kwity Paye, you actually, I believe, that you mocked that pick to them, right?
I did, you know. And when I did the mock, I was like, there's no way Kwity was going to be available at 21 still. And I was like, he's going to be off the board. But he's sitting there during our mock, and I knew the Colts needed some edge rushers. So I was like, let me go and swoop him up. And don't you know when they picked him, I sent some texts to people in the organization. I'm like, you guys just made me look like a genius to get that right at 21. So I was definitely rolling around proud with it.
Absolutely, you should. So with him going in there, they obviously lost to Nico Autry. Justin Houston is gone too, so I guess he's going to be the guy that they're going to lean on to get that cleanup from DeForest Buckner, huh?
Oh yeah, they're definitely the goal is to put him on the edge and let him roll. Let him go get the dogs, man. Get the QBs because they lost 15 and a half sacks and decided not to re-sign Justin and DeNico, who probably is still bitter several months later that the Colts didn't try to sweeten the pot on the offer, is down there and playing with Mike Vrabel, who is honestly, I believe, is one of my favorite coaches in the NFL. So I think those two times that the Colts and Titans play, it's definitely going to be an interesting game. But, yeah, with Kwity, they're going to put him out there, and barring a horrible training camp or something, he should be the week one starter.
That'll be interesting, seeing him start it off, because I know he has all the traits. I want to see how that works against whoever it is at right tackle for the Titans, but also Taylor Lewan. So moving on, Dayo Odangbo. Now, this is the guy that's my favorite pick out of all of these, him and one of the later round guys. But this guy is he's ridiculous. One healthy, I mean, he's very relentless rushing the passer. From what you've gathered, they obviously felt that he was worth the risk, huh? Coming back from the Achilles.
Oh yeah, they believe he's first round pick. And you know what I like on what the Colts are going to do, if they're not putting a timetable on his return. If anything, they've proven that they have no problem having a player sit out for a year. They did it in 2017 with Andrew Luck coming back from the right shoulder surgery. So if Dayo, or Hurricane Dayo, as they've started to label him, is not ready, they're not going to force him out there. They envisioned Jim Irsay had no problem envisioning the next Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney between Dayo and Quiddy Pay on the edges. Everybody knows how good Mathis and Freeney were and pursuing the quarterback when they were a tandem together. They want that out of Dial and Pay going forward.
So they feel like that's their young tandem. Okay, I can respect that. You got Jack Doyle on the roster. What's my man number 81, the former basketball player? He's on there too.
Mo Alley Cox. Mo Better Blue Cox.
I like that. Then you got Kyle Granson. And what are your thoughts on him? Because I really like Trey Burton, man. I'll tell you this. If I was Trey Burton, I would be real mad right now because Tim Tebow is in the league as a tight end, and I'm not. You know what I'm saying? I'll be mad, man. I'll be hot. But
bro, there's a long list of players that are hot. Tim Tebow. Not only is Tim Tebow in the NFL, Tim Tebow's in the NFL not as a quarterback. And as a tight end, a position he's never played before.
Right.
That's what I would be hot about.
And it wasn't like he's some amazing athlete or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's different. Like Ali Cox, like he had footwork. Like Jimmy Graham, athletic. Antonio Gates is like, okay, yeah, I could try them. But really?
Tim Tebow.
Yeah. Tim Tebow. You know what I mean? But hey, man.
That's all I can say off of that, man.
Yeah.
That is all I can say. It's simply, Tim Tebow is about to get a shot to be a tight end in the NFL. But, no, hey, Kyle, you know, he had some drops when he was in college, but he's kind of that hybrid wide receiver. You know from your days in Philly, Frank Wright, Carson Wentz, they love tight ends that can line up out wide and be able to do the thing. It's basically, from a wide receiver standpoint, to take advantage of their speed against linebackers and their size against the smaller defensive backs.
Yeah, for sure, man. And that's something that Frank Reich loves to do. We're going to skip around a little bit. I know they're really good at safety. I want to talk about two other guys, and then I want to get into Carson Wentz a bit. And obviously, Sam Ehlinger, he is a guy that will come in and I guess, fight for the backup spot, huh, with Jacob Easton. What's their plan there?
Yeah, it's a wide-open competition to back up Carson Wentz. That's what it's going to be. Jacob Easton obviously is going to have the advantage because he was in the system last year. But they are not going to come in and say, yes, Jacob is officially number two, Sam is number three. That's not how they're going to roll. It's going to be anybody's shot. But I'm going to say this, which will probably segue into what we're going to talk about next. Whoever they put in at number two, they better have a lot of faith in just in case Carson packed up the horrible 2020 season in his luggage and brought it with him from Philly to Indianapolis.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And we will get into that. I want to touch on Michael Strachan out of Charleston. Man, that's a big dude. Scored a lot of touchdowns his last time on the field.
A lot of receiving yards too, boy.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on him?
You know what? Hey, T.Y. Hilton's not getting younger. Terrence Campbell's dealt with injuries. If he can come in and bring that same tenacity he had at Charleston, he's going to have a chance to make the roster. Like you said, a big wide receiver. He opted out. I mean, their football season was canceled in the fall, and he opted out of the spring season because he wouldn't have a chance to get himself ready for the draft and everything. So he's got size, and just like with tight ends, Wentz does like big wide receivers.
Yeah.
So if he can get on the roster, that's a heck of a 1-2 size combination between Shackman and also Michael Pittman Jr.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. And Zach Pascal, that dude always gives the Titans problems. You know what I mean? He's on the roster.
He's not flashy. Pascal's not flashy. I think he's a very, very good number three wide receiver on the team. An average number two receiver. If he's your number one receiver, you have issues.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're talking to Mike Wells, ESPN Colts reporter, NFL Nation. Mike, you talked about it, man. Let's go back to it. Carson Wentz. Not only do you have to be concerned, not you personally, but do Colts fans have to be concerned about him packing that 2020 season? They also have to be concerned about him packing what has happened every year since his junior year of high school, and that's injuries. So do you think, like, has Frank Reich said anything about trying to keep him from playing hero ball or try to, you know, pull the reins a little bit on him?
Well, that's what Frank Reich had to do in 2018 when he got hired. He had to tell Andrew Luck, it's okay to throw the football away. Mm. It's okay to slide. It's okay to just take the sack if necessary without, you know, scrambling and then getting hit hard and taking a sack. You know, Frank said it early on once the trade became official, Carson just needs to play quarterback. Nothing more, nothing less. And you've seen Carson Wentz at his best.
Yeah.
We all saw from a distance last year a guy who you had to question where he was at mentally. When you get sacked 50 times in just 12 games, that right there can mess with your head.
Yeah.
And then you get benched after 12 games to go along with the 15 interceptions that you threw. That's going to be the question mark. And so people always ask me, what do you think about the trade? I'm intrigued by it. I'm curious on if Frank Reich can get Carson Wentz, not necessarily to what he was in 2017 when he was, you know, had a chance to win MVP, but make him a legitimate starting quarterback on a playoff team.
That's the big thing. Can he be a legitimate and a reliable quarterback? Because not only does he get injured from that hero ball, but he'll turn the football over. And as you mentioned, 15 interceptions. I think at the time that was the most in the league, so he has to cut that down.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be interesting how it rolls. But if they can get it right, and Eric Fisher can get healthy from the Achilles and play left tackle, the Colts have some pieces to work with. I am not saying I think the road to the Super Bowl and AFC will continue to go through Kansas City. I'm curious on if the Buffalo Bills are going to be a bunch of Milli Vanillis, meaning in one hit wonders,
mm-hmm.
or if Josh Allen and the company. And while I don't know where you stand on this team, while the Tennessee Titans are not a fancy team, they're not flashy, they're just a blue collar punch you in your mouth, hand you a two piece of a biscuit, and go about their business, I still think the road in the AFC South still goes through Nashville.
Yeah, I believe that too. And I think it's a two team race. And you mentioned it going through Nashville, so that means the Colts have to go through Nashville. And there's a former Colt, you mentioned him earlier, DeNico Autry. What's some intel on Autry, man? What are the Titans getting?
Man, listen, hey, you know I talk about not flat. DeNico Autry fits in the style that Mike Vrabel and his boys play. He's not worried about getting out there and, you know, out there doing a Cupid shuffle after he gets a bunch of sacks. He's going to get a sack. He may celebrate briefly, but he's going to go about his business. So he is a Tennessee Titan. He fits the model of what Vrabel has built down there, down I-65 in that organization. And he's not going to cause any problems. He just wants to play. He wants to win. And if there's two teams he's going to come after when they play, if the Titans are playing the Raiders, it'll be the Raiders and the Colts.
And I'm glad you mentioned the Raiders too, because like his career just kind of came to life when he got to the Colts. So I have to ask you, what was it? I mean, I know you've talked to him. What was it that kind of allowed him to just really turn things around, or not even turn things around, turn it up?
Well, it's Matt Eberflus, the Colts even the coordinator. His scheme is not flashy. Chase, 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 play through the whistle, and that's what DeNico Autry did. That's what he does. He's going to play hard, and He may not come in with a great twist or a great move or something, a flashy move to get the quarterback. He's going to play bulldog football. He's going to try to run you over to get to the ball carrier or get to the QB.
It's that simple. Hey, Mike, man, I appreciate you coming on. You know we're going to get you back on. The schedule release is coming, so obviously the Colts are on there twice. So obviously we'll be talking a couple times this year, man. Have to get that going, man.
Yes, sir, brother. You be good, T.
Yeah, for sure, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byer, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, as promised. This is something that I'm really looking forward to doing. And we got Titans' first-round pick. You hear the music, Shut Them Down. This is what this guy plans to do when he hits the ground running, Caleb Farley. Caleb, what's good, man?
What's going on? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing really well, man. I appreciate you coming on. And I want to kind of just start from the bat. One of the things that I love about you already is the energy, right? And I felt your energy and vibe when you spoke to us during the intro press conference, man. So I want to shout you out for that.
I appreciate it, man. I just try to be myself. It's hard not to show how excited I've been.
Yeah, no doubt. You got every right to be excited, man. And just from the top, you know, I want to also give you props on that navy sport coat with that light blue plaid. I don't know if that two-tone blue was on purpose, but it was on point.
Yeah, it did have a little Titan feel to it, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, man. And, I'm into fashion, so, you know, say I'll notice something like that. I want to see what your game is like for this season, man. Hopefully we get to see you geared up and everything this year. But I'm going to be 100 with you, right? I'm going to keep it 100. And I'm going to say this. And I want to get it out the way. When you were picked, I did a show. We were doing a draft show here. And when you were picked, I wasn't really for the pick, right? But that was me talking without knowing everything that went in. I didn't realize that the Titans got to get their hands on you. I didn't realize that, you know, there wasn't as much risk associated with it. So that's something that you kind of relayed in when you spoke to us. So that conviction that you had, right? Where does that come from? Because, I mean, I asked you about the possibility of not playing, not right from the jump, you know, in camp. And you're like, man, I rebuked that. And just that conviction to me really stood out. So what's the source of that? Where's that come from?
Well, my faith comes from my mother. Just the morals she installed in me as a child and things like that. And, And just, you know, the confidence of being able to play this week has always been there. Just always getting, you know, good feedback from medical experts. You know, I'm looking at my imaging. I know how I got injured off the football field, and I know that what steps that I took to, you know, fix the injuries. Nobody else knows that. The media doesn't know that. You know, people back home watching the draft don't know that. That's more for, like, you know, conversation and conflict, the media. That's why when you were saying, you know, I didn't know the Titans had got their hands on me. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. I never really was concerned like a lot of people that didn't know me was concerned.
And the thing that's really interesting is you said it's a low-risk and high-reward situation for the Titans, so I like that as well. As far as you feeling – just like you've worked through it, how are you from that standpoint? Do you feel like you're ready to go at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I feel great, but it's this type of procedures, things like that. It's not really about how you feel; it's about just following protocol.
Mm.
Yeah, because you know, like I said, I woke up from surgery and walked out of the hospital a day later, jumped on a flight from L.A. to Virginia to go to pro day. You know, feeling great. It's not about how you feel, though. It's just about strengthening your body back up, making sure you're doing the right exercises, the right rehab and treatments, and giving it the time it needs to rest. So I'm thankful to be at a program that is helping me understand that and, you know, has a great plan for me once I get back. And that's really what I'm doing now. But I feel great, man. I'm excited to have this thing behind me.
That's what's up. And let's put that behind us and talk about you on the field, because I think that's the most important thing, the confidence that you have. I listened to you talk about going against Tyreek Hill and how, you know, you wouldn't be afraid, there wouldn't be panic, you rely on your speed. Is that really, like, is that speed that the confidence, does that provide it, or where do you develop that confidence to be able to say something like that?
I mean, you know, it's not relying just on speed. It's relying on everything, you know, I've learned playing corner. And, I mean, what was I supposed to say?
Right.
Was I supposed to say, you know, I'm fearful of the man? If somebody keep asking me and throwing somebody that they feel like is extremely fast or they feel like is kind of a freak show from sitting on the couch at home, am I supposed to answer that question and agree with them and say, yeah, man, I'm scared of them too? Because, I mean, I'm not. I just answered it honestly to let them know that I feel like guys get in trouble, you know, can almost defeat themselves mentally. That was what the question and answer was. It wasn't me, you know, trying to talk, you know, trash before a season or anything
right.
like that. It was just me answering the question. If I get asked these questions by, you know, interviewers and they're throwing the same name out as if it's supposed to be scary, you know, I had to shut that down and let them know, you know, ain't no man going to intimidate me by, especially by speed. I'm fast too. You know what I'm saying? It was more of that type of energy than anything else. You know, I'm not going to ever say, oh yeah, I'm fearful of this man.
I love that, and that's true, you know what I mean, because it's that mindset. I don't know if you listen to a lot of Biggie Smalls, but Biggie used to have, in the song, he said, they bleed just like us. Picture me being scared of a man that breathes the same air as me. So that's exactly what I wanted to hear from you, man. That's what's up. 4.28 speed, you said that was a slow time for you. You got DK Metcalf running a 10.3. Your speed, is that something that you've always had? Is that something that you've worked to develop over time, or have you always just been a fast cat?
Yeah, I've always been, you know, the fastest person in the room anywhere I went all my life, and hopefully here soon, you know, I can really showcase it.
And what about cat coverage? I thought that was interesting. Some of the things that, you know, Virginia Tech has done with you, they had you cover, you know, some top receivers and you held your own, and that's something that obviously the Titans are going to have you do as well, that cat coverage. Is that something that you embrace, just the responsibility of possibly traveling with top receivers?
And that's something that you know, I love, mano y mano, you know, me versus you, this matchup on the outside. You know, that's the highest level of the competition for me. I absolutely love it. You know, I'm learning the playbook right now with coaching and things like that. And maybe one day, hopefully in the near future, if they feel like they're comfortable enough to let me follow a guy, you know, I would love that. I would be so up for the challenge. You know, I think that's where it goes down at.
No doubt. And we're talking to Caleb Farley, new Tennessee Titans cornerback. Caleb, zone or man covers? What's your preference?
Man coverage.
So, from that being said, press or off man?
Press.
One hand punch or two hand? What's your preference?
Man, that all of that stuff takes care of itself after the snap of the ball. I can't. It's not like one or the other. I might go 2-1 or shoot one hand in there. It's just that's a right there in the moment decision.
Yeah, obviously that will depend on the receiver you're going against, a shorter guy,
exactly.
Taller guy, etc. So you're right with that. And with you being a former quarterback and a wide receiver, how has that helped you as a corner, just as far as like the way you could approach the game and view it from an offensive standpoint?
Yeah, I've just been a lover of football all my life. I've been a fan, a player, analyst. I've just been a lover of football all my life, playing quarterback since 6, playing some receiver in college. All of those things has just helped me understand the game more. You know, I've lined up in many different positions. I've thought like a quarterback, how they read the defense and how they think and what they need to accomplish. I've thought like a wide receiver and seen how different corners play me and things like that. And then lately, you know, I put it all together in corner. So it just gives me a broad perspective of the whole entire football field.
And now that you've put all your focus into playing cornerback, you said you've always been a student of the game, an analyst. I saw you connected with Richard Sherman. Are there any other DBs that you've gotten to talk to, like maybe D'Angelo Hall, fellow VTech corner?
Yes, I've talked to D'Angelo Hall before on the phone and got to chop it up with him. And he's given me, you know, graduation and things like that, et cetera. But, yeah, man, I would love and plan to sit down with a lot of guys and just talk ball. You know, that's what I love to do. I can talk ball with anybody. And, yeah, I got to sit down and talk to Deion Sanders.
Nice.
Before he gave me some great advice on just being motivated and respecting the game and stuff like that. So, definitely, I'm a huge believer in you can't do anything by yourself. I'm a huge believer in, you know, you need your coaches, you need your teammates, you need advice, you need wisdom. And that's what's got me to this point, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
And what about your ball skills? Because when you were on the field, you know, 2019, you did a really good job turning the football over. Is that something that kind of you think possibly made them want to use you at receiver when you first got to VTech? Or what is behind your ball skills?
Ball skills is just something that I've worked on all my life. You know, I can remember being, like I said, a young boy trying to run out there with the middle school and high school quarterbacks, running post routes and, you know, having to track the ball. That's just something I've been around the game my whole life. So
yeah.
Ball skills is something that I do work on, you know, tremendously. I think it's crucial, judging the flight of the ball and catching it different ways, using your body. But it's something that I've kind of got a lot of repetition in just from, you know, my whole life being football, because that's been my whole life.
And it's interesting because in watching you, there were different times where I would watch you and a receiver would try to get deep on you, and you were so willing to turn and run with them. So I think that goes back to the confidence. But they would get you to turn and run, and then they would throttle down and try to work themselves back to the football. But I noticed that you got into your pedal and you exploded out of it, which is unique for a guy that's 6'2". So for you, like, is that something that you've focused in on consistently as far as being able to transition out of your pedal like that?
In college, you know, I was learning everything so fast.
Yeah.
Never playing the position. So I just really tried to listen to my coach, Brian Mitchell, great corners coach. I just tried to take in what he said to heart and remember, you know, the fundamentals and techniques we talked about, and then execute it, you know. Just clear your mind, really, you know, get into a before the game. It sounds crazy, but, you know, just doing all the little stuff I can think of to maybe give me a competitive advantage. Get into a kind of like meditative state, like Bruce Lee, be like water. you push, I give, you give, I push. And just be a sticky cover guy, man. That's all I used to try to be, is aggressive. And, you know, I really didn't want to give up a ball. And those times where I did give up a ball, you know, I usually immediately knew what it was from. It was either from me being mentally lazy or me, you know, second-guessing myself, something like that. And, man, it used to eat me up, but it just would make me go harder the next rep.
No doubt. Do you talk trash on the field? And without cursing? Because I know you're you know, strong in your face. So that would mean you probably don't curse.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
I probably didn't curse out there. When I'm out there, man, it's blood, sweat, and tears. like I'm not vulgar. I'm not the one to, you know, I've kind of grown past that. You know, I've kind of matured mentally, but man, I'm a competitor, dude. I just don't see me and another man going at it for an hour and 15 and me not saying nothing to him.
Yeah, you got to talk. It's only right. And a lot of people who haven't, you know, been on the field before, they don't understand what you just said. The being on across from somebody, like, it is. It's mano a mano, and it's all about who's going to get who first. And I'm not going to be the one to get got first. So that's absolutely the mindset. That's absolutely the mindset. As far as the field for the position is concerned, that's something that you seem to continue to be doing. Do you feel like just how everything happened, is it kind of like a blessing in disguise where you fell into a situation where this is a team that seems to really match you, and this is a team that's in a good position to be competitive?
Absolutely. It's such a huge blessing, and I'm going to tell you why. All my life, I felt like a dog. I felt like the best. Even when I wasn't polished, even when I'm not polished, just as I look at myself as a football player, raw athleticism, football, vision, just instincts, I've always looked at myself as elite, one of the best. So for the Tennessee, and when I was going to college, you know, Virginia Tech gave me some of my first looks. And so when bigger schools offered me, that's why I stayed loyal and went to Virginia Tech. You know, I kind of felt like for these guys to be looking at me earlier, they believed in me. They seen what I know. So I want to go play for them. I want to give my talents to them. So for the Tennessee Titans to believe in me, I'm going to give them my whole heart. I'm going to give them my everything. And I can't wait to show Nashville, Titan Nation that they got something special. I can't wait to lace these cleats up and just show that. You know, it's been a lot of talk up to this point, but that's one of the huge reasons why, you know, I've never had a favorite NFL team or a favorite college team. Now my favorite NFL team is the Tennessee Titans for life. So I can't wait to lace them up for you guys.
Couldn't have said it better right there. Caleb Farley, I appreciate you for coming on, man. This is your first interview with the Nashville area media, so I thank you for allowing me to welcome you to Nashville, man. I can't wait to see how this career continues to develop, man. It's going to be fun covering you.
I appreciate it. It's going to be fun covering.